Today is January 9th, 2015, and this is episode number 288, I think, of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, chief numerologist. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit MacObserver.com. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@MacObserver.com.
Yeah, apparently counting is not my strong suit.
Yeah, last week was episode 287. Yet you informed our dear listeners whom I love so much as to always try to give them the truth. You told them it was episode 289.
Well, to be fair, we were in different time zones.
Oh, that is a good point. That is an excellent point. So this is actually episode 288.
Right. So if you're listening to these in order, you will feel like you're going backwards in time, which does mean that you're probably living on an event horizon.
Yeah, that's true. And getting younger.
Yeah, and getting younger. So good for you.
Yeah, congratulations, everybody. That's fantastic news. Thanks for letting us know.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't wait to find out what next week's episode number is.
Now, all right, I have another question. Speaking of timey-wimey.
Uh-huh.
Why are we recording on Friday?
We're recording on Friday because we've been at CES all week long.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and it makes sense to do a wrap-up episode at the end of the show as opposed to in the middle of it.
By what you mean, on Wednesday I was traveling. Wednesday night you were traveling. On Thursday we were both recovering. And so Friday was the soonest we could actually do so.
Right. That's what I said.
It was definitely a busy week.
Boy, howdy. Yeah, I logged a lot of steps on my Fitbit this week.
Well, I logged a lot of steps for me on my iPhone. I was definitely a wreck by the end of that third day. Of course, I say the third day, Tuesday. Tuesday night was my last full day at the show, and that night ended in the Tenacious D concert.
So that was a great way for you to wrap up your time at CES.
It was. It wasn't quite as great as wrapping up earlier than I have in the past. That was pretty awesome.
I can see where that worked out really well for you.
It did. But the Tenacious D show was a lot of fun. We talked about that on TDO. God, I guess that was actually this week, wasn't it?
That was. It feels like it was forever ago already.
Yeah, it does. It does. So that was a lot of fun. If you want to hear more about the Tenacious D show, listen to Wednesday's TMO's Daily Observations.
That's right. Hey, we were both on that.
We were both on that.
With Dave Hamilton.
Nope, Dave was not on that show.
He wasn't?
Nope. It's just you and me talking about Tenacious D.
Oh, well, in my fantasy world, Dave was sitting there with us.
Yeah, he had a meeting, remember?
Oh, right.
Right. So, CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, or as they prefer it to be called, International CES, whatever.
Yep, whatever.
CES.
I've been calling it CES all week.
Yeah, CES. It's CES.
And so far, anyway, the Expo cops haven't shown up to arrest me.
So, yeah, well, right. They could still. It could still happen, but I'm gonna, you know, we're rebels like that.
That's how we roll.
Yeah. So this is the big annual Consumer Electronics Show. Now, this relates to Apple because a lot of people that make stuff for Apple are there. Apple itself is not there.
I don't think Apple has ever had an official presence at CES.
Yeah, long time ago.
Did they really? I know they had a presence at NAB.
No, they used to also be at CES. Let's Google the last time Apple was at CES. Now, hopefully I won't crash to the desktop.
Well, if you do, it'll be a very lonely show for me.
Not seeing anything. Anyway, I believe in the 90s, in the mid-90s, probably even before Steve came back. Maybe that was one of the things that Steve put an end to.
It wouldn't surprise me. That's interesting. I have no recollection of Apple ever being at CES.
Fair enough. And it would be pretty cool if I ended up embarrassing myself on this, but I'm pretty sure that once upon a time, Apple used to actually be involved with CES a long, long time ago. Nonetheless, Apple's not there, but Apple, generally speaking, tends to overshadow the show one way or another.
Yes. Yeah, they don't have to go. They are there in spirit.
Now, they do usually have folks there from both checking stuff out from a competitive standpoint.
Sure.
And also even maybe meeting with people for retail deals for the Apple stores, because, you know, Apple is a major retailer these days.
So I've heard.
But what they don't have is a booth. What they don't have is a presentation. What they don't do is any kind of keynote address or press conference at CES.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they have like a hotel suite somewhere that they take people to for private meetings.
I don't think so. Actually, I don't think so. We'd hear about that.
All right. Well, okay. Then that's something that they reserve for NAB.
Fair enough. Yeah, and they could. I mean, I could be wrong. I'm. That's a guess on my part, not a knowledge comment.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right. So, let's start with talking about some of the coolest things that we saw.
Okay. All right, one of the cool things that I saw early on, so it would have been before the expo floor officially opened, was this Segway-ish kind of thing, meaning it's two wheels that you balance on, but it doesn't have a handlebar grip like a Segway does.
And okay.
It's called Smart Wheels.
Yep.
And this thing was really cool. It's the wheels are probably like, I'm going to guess somewhere between 6 and 8 inches in diameter. And you just stand on this little platform, and depending on how you move, and the movements are very subtle. So it's almost like, what direction do you want to go? Think about that. And then the natural movements that your body makes when you're thinking about that will send this little platform rolling along.
Which is essentially what the Segway does.
Yeah. But now you're doing it without having to tie up your hands.
Alternately, now you're doing it without having something to balance on.
That's true.
Is that, you know, tomato, tomato. But
I was balancing just fine on it, and we have video proof on the internet of that.
That's true. We do. There are videos on the Instagram from you or of you and of Dave,
mm-hmm.
both tooling around on this thing.
Right. And the footage that you see of me, Dave was taking, and he started filming me within, I'm going to say, 3 seconds of me getting on the platform. So what you're seeing is the very first time that I hopped on this thing. And I don't fall on my butt. So that's pretty great. And a lot of people see it and they think, oh, well, you had some time to practice and learn how it works. And nope, I just kind of hopped on or stepped on. And
really, did people actually accuse you of like boning up on this thing before you were filmed?
No, but I did have people ask me how much time I had to spend practicing before Dave started filming me. Not like they were thinking I'm incapable of doing this. They were just curious how difficult it was to learn how to ride Smart Wheels.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, anyway, it was certainly very cool. I was very jealous that I didn't get to do it. I wasn't at that particular event. I think I was writing stories.
I think you were. Yeah, Dave and I went to a special Showstoppers event for startups that were looking for angel investors. And it was fascinating to watch the pitch that each of these companies was making.
Right. Right. I guess it's my turn to mention the product, isn't it?
Yeah, if you can't think of one, I can mention more. Install for you.
Yeah, go ahead and install for me for a second.
All right. Since I started off with something that's not Apple specific,
mm-hmm.
I'll follow it up with something that's not Apple specific.
Okay.
Just, you know, sort of like a theme. So there's this company that that I came across called Ousterhout Design. And what they're making are virtual reality goggles. And so I got to try these goggles on. And they will let you take photographs or videos of whatever it is that you're seeing. They can display additional information about your surroundings. They can show 3D movies. And then they also can do a kind of a virtual reality. It almost felt like I was in a Star Trek holodeck. They brought up this virtual Yosemite National Monument.
Okay.
And so I'm standing there, and I start looking around, and it was as if I was standing on the ground in Yosemite and looking around. And so I looked left and right, and I'd see what would have been there had I actually been there. So instead of turning my head, I turned my body from my feet. So I was facing the opposite direction, and the goggles tracked as if I was really moving. And so I looked up, and I could see the sky all the way around. I looked down. I could see the ground at my feet. And at that point, it was suddenly mildly disorienting, because I looked down, and I had been so immersed into this environment, I was surprised when I couldn't see my feet. So anyhow, it was really cool. I absolutely loved just the whole experience. And I also loved that they could swap out the interior lenses for prescriptions. So they had a bunch of prescription lenses, and they found a set that was close enough to mine so that, mm-hmm. that I could try it out. So I took off my regular glasses, put this thing on, and it was really cool. They're like stupid expensive, I'm sure. I think one set is $5,000 or something. But it was really cool. And it's a shipping product, so it's not like I was looking at
it's a shipping product if you have $5,000.
Right. So primarily it's being used right now by government agencies for training, you know, like military training, and by big corporations that need to do whatever their specialized work is, where right. this type of device would be really beneficial.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, another, frankly, not Apple specific, although they were running it off of a Mac, and then in store they do it with iPad. So it is Apple related. But it's what Lowe's was doing. Lowe's, the hardware store.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, first of all, I'm going to be honest. I didn't expect Lowe's to be at CES.
But there they were.
There they were. And they have an innovations lab that is, everyone I met from the innovations lab was young. So, you know, they've got a bunch of young people there that are looking for ways of disrupting things, which is great. And they were talking about two different things that they're doing. The first is a robot in the store, and we both looked at this.
The robot thing was really cool.
Yeah, so the robot would be stationed at the door, and you can walk up to the robot, assuming, of course, that it's not busy with another customer. And you can tell it what you're looking for, or show it what you're looking for. Apparently, a lot of people go into Lowe's with the thing that they're looking for, because they want to be able to compare it.
Sure. I need more screws for whatever.
Yeah, I need this screw, or, you know, maybe I'm looking for a hammer or something. That was one of the examples they were using, was a hammer. But so the robot can recognize the device that you're holding, or the item that you're holding, and tell you where to find it. And then if you want, it will take you to the right place in the right aisle to get the thing that you're wanting to buy, because, you know, obviously it's got the store mapped, and it has a complete inventory of everything in the store in its memory banks.
In its memory banks.
Memory banks.
That's awesome.
I'm going to kick it old school. And I thought that it'll talk to you, and it will do several languages. I think that they've got plans for up to seven languages. They're just rolling this thing out. They've got one a quarter of a mile from my house, actually. I'm going to be going down to check it out at Orchard Valley Hardware. which is used to be a small chain of hardware stores that Lowe's now owns. So they've only got two of these in the country as the pilot. But I thought that was just really, really, really interesting. I think that this is a good use of robots, and I think that a lot of people will like it. And then the other thing they were showing was a little bit of virtual reality where you can, I guess the way they rolled it out, actually, that you use an iPad and you stand inside a room inside the store, and the room has got all these markers, right? For, you know, it's got a toilet marker and a shower marker on the walls. Mm-hmm. And these markers can be recognized by through the camera by the app on the iPad. And you tell the app how big your bathroom is. And you can sort of, you know, move, like, my toilet's over here, my shower's over here, my sink's right here. And then you can substitute those things with new products from Lowe's. And then hold up the iPad and move it around, and as it sees the walls, the iPad actually shows you what your bathroom would look like with those products.
So you can remodel your bathroom virtually before you spend any money buying stuff and then finding out it isn't going to work the way you thought.
Yeah. Yeah,
and really
it's
cool.
It's not like it's a holodecker or anything, but it's you know, it's certainly a step along. I think this isn't going to end up being a theme. It's a step along the path towards that sort of technology. And and what they were showing at the show was that same concept. They've only rolled that out in two stores in Canada, right? And I asked them. I said, "Are Canadians like, you know, more open to these kinds of technologies? Why did y'all pick Canada?"
And Canadians are more into remodeling.
I don't know why they chose Canada, but that's anyway, the two stores are in Canada where they're doing this. But what they were showing at CES was the same concept, but using virtual reality goggles. They were using Oculus Rift goggles, but it's not a product. It's not a technology they intend to tie to Oculus Rift. So you put the Oculus Rift goggles on, and then that way you don't have to actually be in a room with the markers on the wall. It could be anywhere.
And I popped those goggles on too, and it was pretty impressive. As I looked around, I was looking at the interior of this freshly remodeled bathroom.
Yeah, again, it's really cool. This is all stepping stone stuff, in my opinion. But it's really it was interesting, and they were running this stuff off of a Mac. And of course, again, at the stores where they've rolled out the two test places, they're using iPads.
Right. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Once upon a time, this sort of thing would only have been done with Windows devices. Right. Yeah, there's no way development like this would have taken place on anything but a Windows device 6 years ago, 7 years ago.
And yet here we are. They're running pilot programs in their stores with iPads.
And doing the development
on
Macs and iPads.
Yeah.
So that's cool stuff.
Hooking up Oculus Rift to a Mac and giving us demos at CES. It was really cool.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. That was good stuff. Now, another thing, I'm going to go ahead and go, I'm going to take a second one.
Okay.
Since you were covering for me while I was typing to Kelly.
Yeah, I've got your back.
Yeah, you do. The Phantom Implosive Sound Center, and the company is called Deviolette. They're a French company.
Oh, ooh la la!
They were showing this speaker system that sounded incredible in a ballroom. This was at the PepCon event. Or no, was that it unveiled? Was that the first night? No, it was not.
No, it was not. So it had to be the PepCon.
Yeah, it was the PepCon event for sure. So, you know, PepCon is this, you know, so it's sort of like a small trade show within the trade show where you've got a bunch of companies and the only people that are there are press and the companies that are showing stuff to the press. But it's still noisy. and it's still large, and it's the last place in the world you want to try to listen to any kind of speaker device, despite the fact that everybody's showing Bluetooth speakers and, you know, all that sort of thing.
And what did you do? You listened to it in that environment.
I did, and it sounded good. It sounded amazing. It sounded absolutely astoundingly amazing, quite frankly. I couldn't believe how good it sounded. Now, I'm not going to bank my reputation on it sounding good in a home simply because it is such a bad place to listen to any kind of audio source. But I'm guessing that it's going to sound good. Now, when they show, oh, and this thing, so it looks really cool, right? You saw it.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like it should get up and fly around and scan the environment for signs of life.
Yeah, sounding something like, as it's like a Jetsons car.
It picks up and goes.
Thank you. That was good.
Oh, my
good.
God. I love, now that I realize what you're doing. Oh, Brian, your sound effects.
That was, oh, yeah, I'm embarrassed. If I'd known you could have done that, I would have just said, hey, Jeff, can you make that the Jetsons sound that you do so well?
Yeah, if you ever need the Jetsons car, just let me know.
All right. Anyway, so Wait.
Do your Jetsons car again.
No, I'm not going to do it.
Come on.
It's a foot and a half long by about, 8-9 inches across. It's round, ovalish kind of thing. And then it's got the subwoofers on either side that you see moving in and out. And it looks really, really cool. And it just sounds amazing. And you can put up to 24 of these things in sequence. They'll all speak to each other and play together.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So, you know, you could put a ring if you're going to do some sort of Insta rave and you have a ton of money because that's the thing. I asked her how much they were. And I thought she told me $199.
Meaning $200.
$200. Yeah. And she's French. I'm not. Either I misunderstood. Actually, I had to have misunderstood because there's no way she would have quoted me the wrong price. I simply had to have misunderstood. Turns out they're $19.99, $2,000.
What's a decimal point among friends?
Yeah, sure. What's a decimal point between friends? So, you know, putting 24 of these things for your InstaRave is gonna require a substantial investment. I realize that that price point makes it well beyond the price range of the vast majority of people who might be listening to us. But I was just so blown away by how good they sounded. I do hope they let me test one. It was really interesting what they were doing.
Yeah, it was cool. I was really impressed with the audio, and that was listening to it off of your iPhone.
Yeah, that's true. I posted a video to Instagram. I guess we'll put a link to that.
Sure. That's what we
show notes. And I posted a recording of it. And I was honestly, what I was filming was the subwoofers moving in and out because they just look fun. They look cool. And I was kind of assuming that there's so much noise from the show that it would just, you know, sound like a muffled mess. But it turns out it sounds like I actually added a soundtrack to the video.
It does.
So between what Instagram is doing and what the iPhone is doing, that was an amazing capture. So anyway, we'll have a link to it. You can see it for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. What else do you see?
All right. There was this company called Oort, as in the Oort cloud.
Okay.
And they're doing home automation, smart home stuff. And, okay, so there's a lot of products out there you can get and then build into your homes. And mm-hmm. then there's companies like Oort and Belkin through their Wemo product line that are making stuff so you can retrofit your home or your apartment without having to rip stuff out of the walls. And I really liked what Oort was doing because they've put together this collection of switches and lights and things that are easy to install and then integrate together. And then they've even gone so far as to make a hub device that can control all of your smart home gear. And it was like really cool. It all looked really good, and it was easy for the average person to set up.
Cool.
Yeah.
No, so, we saw a lot of home automation stuff, and that's, I guess that's going to kind of end up being a bit of a segue for us.
Yeah, kind of. Oh, hey, we've gone from smart wheels to segue to smart homes too.
Yeah.
I was trying to make your segue sound even cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, one of the things that we noticed, I thought what would be good would be to talk both about trends that we saw emerging from the show, and also Apple from a standpoint of, both Apple's effect on the show and also a couple of things that we feel like Apple needs to be doing a better job getting out in front of. So I don't know. Why don't we start with trends?
Okay. So actually, since I just talked about Urt, we'll go with that trend.
Yeah.
And what I was seeing with, and I'll use Urt and Belkin's Wemo product line as an example, companies are taking us out of the Wild West of, here's some smart home device add-on thing, good luck.
Yeah, like X11. X11 has always kind of felt a little good luckish with me.
Yeah, I mean, you're just never sure if you have the right product, the right software version number. I mean, it was all this kind of mystical thing.
And you really need to know what you were doing to not only set it up, but to use it.
Yeah, for the average user, it was a very intimidating step to make.
That's how I've always felt about X11 stuff. Really neat. And that was certainly has been a stepping stone technology. Who knows where it'll go? It could actually continue to evolve and become ever more cool. But it was intimidating.
Yes, and I didn't feel like I was looking at intimidating systems when I was looking at these new nicely integrated smart home packages.
Right.
And I really like that because there's a lot of people out there that have homes where ripping wiring out is just not going to be an option. And what they want is something where they can just easily add modules in that handle the smart home functions, and then you're good to go. And that's what you can do here. And I can see these as a really great option for people that say rent apartments. And they want to turn their apartment into their smart home.
Or renting a home, even. Just rent any kind of
rental. If you are a renter, these are great options that save you from having to pull outlets out of the wall, and then before you move, swap everything back out again.
Yeah, so for instance, we saw several companies with smart outlets.
Yes, that's true.
So, outlets, a box that you can plug into an outlet that you can then plug in a non-smart device to.
Right.
And what you get is the ability to control that outlet from your smartphone or tablet, whatever. Just for the sake of argument, let's just call it smartphone.
Sure.
For simplicity's sake. So for instance, a lamp. You have a dumb lamp. Well, plug it into one of these smart switches, we'll call them, and you can now turn it on and off by your phone, set a timer by your phone, control the amount of power that gets to the lamp. So, in other words, you can dim your lamp, whether or not it was built to be dimmed. Of course, that turns out that's actually bad for a lot of light bulbs, but that's another story. Your coffee machine. You could remotely turn on your coffee machine. Now you can't directly access the controls on the coffee machine,
unless you buy one of the Wemo compatible coffee machines.
Right, but that's separate from these smart switches.
Right, totally separate. You're right.
You know whatever it is whatever kind of a dumb electronic device you have, you can control the power to that device, with these smart switches. And this is another one of those, I think, evolutionary steps that we mentioned earlier. You know, at some point, at some point, and probably within 20 years, and maybe even within 10 years, vaguely possible within five, but I don't think so, you're going to see the vast majority of devices for homes with a built-in ability to communicate with your mobile devices.
Yeah, and on one hand, that's really, really cool because we'll have so much more control over the way our homes work.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if this isn't done in a wise and well thought out manner, we're going to end up with extremely complicated homes.
Well, that's just it, though. The things we saw were all really easy to use.
Right. So I think we have a trend that's taking us down the right path.
The one company that was showing, they were showing at the little Bluetooth event at the Portofino.
Yeah, that would restaurant. Have been Oort.
Nope, Emberlight's what I was thinking of.
Oh, right, right.
Emberlight makes a light bulb socket that you plug into your light bulb socket so that you can then put any kind of dumb light bulb or lamp, as it's technically called, into their socket and, again, control that socket from your smartphone.
And do tell me, what bulb were they using to demo with?
Well, they were using two incandescent bulbs, one of which was an Edison bulb.
I just thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah, it's super, super smart. There was another company that was showing another variation of on the Edison bulb too, but you know, it's got the long strands. So it's a tall light bulb, and it's got the long strands that go up and down. Yeah, with the loopy curls, and you know, just looks super cool. It was a great way to actually demonstrate what they were doing. I posted videos. Of a video of that in action as well. So I mean, we saw several products that are bridging the dumb electronic world to the smart electronic world. That's the thing. That's the trend that we saw. And I don't think by any stretch that we're at any kind of peak or. You know, this is where things are going. This is simply pointing the direction towards where things are going.
Yes. And I'm very pleased with this direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also very pleased at the simplicity. You know, all the companies that I was talking to were focused on this idea of making these things simple and easy to use. So the interfaces on their apps were all pretty clean. They all look good.
Yes, that was something that pleased me as well.
Yeah, it was super interesting. And this, why don't we go ahead and bring in this thing, because you and I were talking on one of our car trips about the fact that that we both feel like Apple needs to get out in front of this more so than Apple is.
Yeah, they've developed HomeKit, but there's really nothing out there that uses HomeKit,
including anything from Apple.
Yes, especially anything from Apple.
Yeah, all of these companies were talking about HomeKit. I think all of these companies are interested in working with HomeKit, but it's still, you know, it's still kind of a you know, we have these first tentative branches into the footsteps into this new territory. And to me, Apple should absolutely release a HomeKit hub. Do you remember that piece that Kelly did?
Oh, yes. Yeah. She posited that Apple TV would be a great platform for Apple to build out HomeKit support from, and it could work as a hub.
Yeah, be it Apple TV, be it, to me, that was Kelly's argument, was that Apple TV is just a great place to do it. And she's right. It is a great place to do it. Another great place to do it would be building the stuff into airport base stations.
Sure.
Apple could even release a separate hub of some sort if Apple were so to choose. And Apple could get get out in front with some actual devices or start working with some of these third-party companies to, you know, Apple could actually be doing that behind the scenes, but that, I didn't get that vibe at the show.
Neither did I. It really feels like Apple has done so far with HomeKit what they've done with many other products in the past, where they create something, throw it out there, see what happens, and they just move on.
Yeah. 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 I think we're way too early in HomeKit to pronounce that Apple, you know, to conclude that Apple has just moved on. You know, we have no idea what Apple's doing in behind the scenes, but Apple does have this track record of a record of doing this, and I wish that Apple would get out front. I wish that Apple I would like Apple to be the center of my smart home, because I trust Apple not to try to take that data and profit from it.
I agree. And we know that other companies can make smart home hubs that are very compact. Because, well, we saw that with Oort, that their thing is, it looks like a disc, and it's not much bigger around than the footprint of an Apple TV or actually an AirPort Extreme base station. It's not that big. Mm-hmm. So Apple can do it, and I would love to see it happen.
I would like to see it happen, too. I would like to see it happen. And, again, we don't know what one seldom knows what's going on behind the scenes at Apple, but I don't get the...
It sure doesn't feel like Apple's doing anything more than throwing out the HomeKit platform and leaving it at that.
It really does, because I feel like a lot more company representatives would have said, well, let's just, we're talking to different partners, whatever kind of cagey thing to let us know. Cause that's the sort of thing they would want to make sure we knew.
Right. Or even just saying we're working on HomeKit support, but we can't elaborate right now.
Right.
Yeah. But no, that's not what we're seeing. It's just these companies are all coming up with their own platforms and rolling with it.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, there's another company that instead of doing like the whole platform, they're mm-hmm. focusing on LED bulbs, and they're doing what I'm calling smart bulbs. Mm-hmm. And the company is Singled, and they have an LED bulb that has a Wi-Fi extender built in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yes. So,
like the purpose of the Wi-Fi extender is only to extend your network for you?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it aimed at actually solving a particular problem associated with the bulb itself?
Oh no, it's totally to extend your network. That's what it's there for.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so instead of having to throw like AirPort Expresses all around your house or whatever the extra range extender is that you would need so that you have good Wi-Fi coverage throughout your house, just buy light bulbs and put them in the fixtures.
Huh. And, LED bulbs tend to, or at this point, we're told that they'll last for, like 20 years.
Right. And there you go. So,
of course, at the same time, Wi-Fi is going to change, though.
It is.
So, like that extender, that's interesting, because that extender capability isn't actually going to be as useful for as long as the bulb will work as a bulb.
That's very, very likely. However, you can still use the bulb as a bulb.
That's true. That's kind of, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, then maybe you'll be a little more excited about their other products, because they have another bulb that has a microphone and camera built in. And the purpose is for, like at your porch, where you want to see who is at the door at night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Put this in your light fixture, and now you're illuminating your porch, and you have a camera so that you can see who's there, and a microphone so you can hear who's there.
And no one's going to be looking, the bad guys are coming. They're not going to see that camera.
Right. They won't see that camera.
Right. Because that's the kind of world I live in, where the bad guys are like knocking on my, the bad guys are apparently coming to my door and knocking on the door and they're going to take out, they'd take out a camera if they saw one, but because they don't see one, anyway, I don't know what world I live in. It's a crazy world.
Clearly. Okay, then maybe this one is a little more useful for you.
No, that is cool. I'm mocking myself. I'm not mocking the product. I'm mocking my knee-jerk reaction to it.
Okay. So, all right, one last bulb from them. They have a bulb that has, it does like the color changing, sort of like a Philips Hue bulb does. Mm-hmm. And then it also has a speaker built in. So you plug it into an outlet, and now you have a speaker that you can stream music to. And you can gang them up in your house. So you could have your speakers all in the ceiling without adding extra... Man, I'm tough calling, crowd.
No, I like the camera. The camera and microphone, I like. The speaker and my light bulb, I don't like. I'm way too much of an audio snob to be comfortable with a speaker that'll fit in a light bulb.
All right, so now for you, we're back to... $2,000 speakers for your
yes for sure. There we go. Yeah, that's, I think, awesome. Those but I think the first, the, okay, the Wi-Fi extender is an interesting idea, but in the paying for it in that form doesn't make any sense to me, because it ain't gonna last as long as the bulb does. So now you're just, I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe you get like 3 or 4 years of use at the most out of that.
I think you'll get more than 3 or 4 years of use out of that. Because look at the number of people that have Wi-Fi networks today that are using technology that is far older than that.
Yeah, true.
I think you'll get a longer life out of it.
All right, fine. I don't like the speaker, though. I don't like the speaker at all.
All right. Well, I'm glad we found a compromise where there's something you like, something you can be okay with, and
because that's what's important.
Yeah, I know.
It's all about me.
It is. It's all about you.
Now, speaking of all about them, Misfit got into the of all companies got into the LED hue changing light bulb market.
Yes, they did, and I thought that was pretty interesting because. They have been so far limited to, fitness trackers. And, yes. And now they've got these bulbs. I thought they looked really nice.
Yeah, they looked good. They definitely looked good. And it's interesting to see them going in that particular direction because, you know, one of the companies that they're competing with is Philips. And Philips is... a giant in the light bulb industry with massive labs and all sorts of technology and patents and research and all sorts of things to help them along. And here's this little fitness tracker company that is going to be competing with them.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe if the Misfit customers are happy enough with their Shine trackers, they'll be more inclined to buy Misfit LED bulbs. I don't know.
Sure. I mean, and they looked good. We haven't tested them yet or anything. But if they're price competitive with Philips or even a little bit less expensive than Philips, then they could well have a hit on their hands.
Yeah, they could. And like I said, the bulbs did look nice.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did. Now, the one thing I don't know about the Misfit bulb, which is Bolt. I think it's called the Bolt. I don't know if it links up to your Shine, which is their fitness tracker.
Okay.
Because if it does, and you could have the bulbs like reflect your fitness status level or something, that would be kind of cool. I do know that there is a way to remotely control the bulbs. Like, well, remotely in that if you're in the room, I think. You can actually use a Shine, and there are taps you can do on it that'll control the bulbs.
Oh, cool.
So, but yeah, it would be kind of cool if it actually lets you use it sort of like a mood bulb and display your current health and fitness status.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're like really, really sick, and then is it going to display colors that make you sicker? That would be bad.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. It's almost like putting a speaker in a light bulb.
Almost like that. So, How about we look at let's use Misfit as our springboard to talking about health and fitness, because this is another thing that involves Apple.
It does. Okay, so the Apple trend that I saw in the health and fitness market at CES was that companies are making trackers and other devices that consistently ended the pitch to me with, and when the Apple Watch comes out, we're going to add support. So there's all these companies that are looking at their fitness tracking devices, not specifically as we're going to put HealthKit support in, but we want this to work as an Apple Watch accessory.
Yeah. So one of the things that we were expecting was to be told that that a company had an Apple Watch killer. Right? That's what we were expecting before the show.
Right. And no one talked about being an Apple Watch killer.
They talked about, in fact, no one really seemed worried about the Apple Watch.
No, not at all. It was like, oh yeah, we're going to work with that.
Yeah, and by working with it, what they mean is having an app for the Apple Watch as opposed to, again, integrating with HealthKit.
Right.
A couple of companies did make noise about integrating with HealthKit, but no one seemed to be...
That didn't seem to be a priority. It was Apple Watch support that they wanted specifically.
Right. But again, it's only having an app so that you can actually access their data on the Apple Watch as opposed to, you know, fitting in with the HealthKit ecosystem.
Yeah, so it sure sounded like a lot of these companies are not overly interested right now in jumping on the HealthKit bandwagon.
Or worried about it. Or even worried about Apple Watch. We saw several fitness tracking devices that were aimed at the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw one company, what were they called? They were called Healthograph, is that right? Or Wellograph. Wellograph is making I'm not going to call it a smartwatch, because really it's more of a...
It's a health fitness tracker watch.
Yeah, it's designed to look like a piece of jewelry, kind of like mm-hmm. the Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
Except for it uses an e-ink display, which is very low power, and by the way, is harder to see than a backlit OLED or LED or, you know,
right,
whatever. But you get 5 to 7 days of battery life out of one charge,
as opposed to Apple Watch, which is going to have to be charged every single day.
Yeah, so we think.
Yeah, that's the impression we have been left with
by Apple.
By Apple.
Apple has basically intimated that you'll get a day's use out of an Apple Watch, and then you'd recharge it at night. Whereas Wellograph is actually that they want you wearing it at night. Was that the company that wanted you wearing it at night so it would track your sleep? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, actually, quite frankly, I think it's too big on the wrist to wear at night. I wouldn't want to wear that thing to bed.
I'll let you know, because we will be testing one of these.
But what was really interesting is that they made their device not to look like some sort of, and I don't know quite how to articulate this. It wasn't designed to look like a fitness tracking device. It wasn't, you know, it doesn't look sporty. It doesn't look rugged. It doesn't look, you know,
No, it doesn't.
You know, oh yeah, I work out. You know, instead it looks like a watch. It looks like a digital watch, admittedly a thick digital watch.
Yeah, it looks like something you would wear to the office as opposed to the gym.
Or a night out.
Or you'd wear to it on a night out. Sure.
And one of the things I appreciated about it is that the back of it is actually curved to fit your wrist. Whereas most of the smartwatches that we've seen are just flat.
Now, what I thought was absolutely wonderful about that, in addition to the fact that it's curved to fit your body, which is not made out of right angles and parallel lines, is that when I got on my flight to leave from Denver to Vegas for CES, the guy sitting beside me was wearing a smartwatch,
mm-hmm.
big clunky thing,
mm-hmm.
all flat, looked like it wasn't comfortable at all, didn't fit on his wrist well. It wasn't shaped for humans. So, of course, I took a photograph and tweeted it out to the world And then
because that's how you roll.
Because that's how I roll, and pointed out the fact that it was all flat. And we get to CES, and we see this watch, and it has a curved back. And I'm like, yes, someone gets it.
Yeah. So yeah, it was really. You know what? The Wellograph to me seemed like it was aimed at, I don't know, let's call it 55-year-olds and up, with a little bit of disposable money, but folks who are actually, if they're going to have a device on the wrist, they actually want it to look elegant.
Yeah.
Didn't feel like it was aimed at young people to me.
Right.
And that's not a criticism. That's an observation. You're going to tell. Oh, keep dreaming, Jeff.
Oh.
Keep the dream alive, sir.
Sometimes it's all I've got.
Yeah, anyway, so that was interesting. And then Garmin, they've been in the fitness tracking
they have market Garmin for a while. And Magellan both, and they both have been making some really great products, and they're both, I think, stepping up their game again this year. Their products are clearly focused at people that are physically active. These are not products that most people would feel comfortable wearing to a boardroom meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they still look nice.
Yes, they did.
And I've
seen
some ugly fitness trackers.
Yeah, they look nice, but they all look sporty.
Oh, yeah, definitely sporty. Yeah.
You know, they look like the kind of thing that you expect a fitness tracking device to look like.
Yeah, and... But a nice fitness tracking device.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then we also spoke to the fine folks at Fitbit.
We did. And that was a fun conversation.
Well, I had fun.
Well, and that's what really matters.
I don't know if they had fun. The person we talked to was a very good sport about how much of a jerk I was being about HealthKit, because the guy gave us great answers, but I didn't like any of them. They were great answers from a corporate PR speak standpoint.
Now, to summarize what all of our questions were, what we were asking is, why isn't Fitbit supporting HealthKit?
Yeah. And what the blank does "we're evaluating it" mean? Because I've never liked it. That's what they've been saying since HealthKit was unveiled, right?
True.
We're evaluating it, and I've never liked that answer because
it's a non-answer.
It's a non-answer.
It's a deflection.
It's a massive deflection, and it's always annoyed me. I just want, you know, Fitbit is the market leader, and in my opinion, Fitbit should just, you know, say what they actually think about HealthKit. And the thing is that what I took away from that conversation is that Fitbit isn't interested in supporting HealthKit because it doesn't benefit Fitbit.
And that's probably totally accurate, even if that's not the message that they wanted to give us or that they believe themselves. But I don't think Fitbit sees any benefit for them in supporting healthcare right now. Now, on one hand, Fitbit has a well-established system, platform.
Excellent platform.
Yes, and it's one that I've been invested in for years. I have several devices that all feed information into my Fitbit account, and I can look at everything in the Fitbit interface, which is nice. And there you go. Why should they throw that away? And they don't need to throw it away, but why should they embrace another system that just duplicates what they're already doing? And at this point, doesn't seem to duplicate it as well. And I'll tell you,
I've got an answer to that. The answer to that is that they could sell fitness trackers to people like me who are interested in being in Apple's HealthKit ecosystem because of the control that Apple's HealthKit ecosystem gives to us over our data.
Sure. And I totally get that, and that totally makes sense.
I, at this point, Apple, having unveiled HealthKit with the promise that Apple is protecting our privacy and giving us the tools to control who has access to our data, right? That having happened, I personally will not buy a health fitness tracking device. I don't even think I'd test a fitness tracking device at this point that doesn't support HealthKit.
And you are not alone. Now, I will continue to test and play with devices that don't support HealthKit because I know we have readers and listeners that will be interested in some of these devices. However, I have to think long and hard about what I want to use as my personal fitness tracking device going forward. Am I going to stick with Fitbit, or am I going to throw away all the time that I've invested in collecting my own data through their platform and go to something else?
Right. Right. And that's what put me off about Fitbit's answer, that Fitbit's seeming, again, the message that I took away from the meeting, and I told the PR person that we were talking to, I said, man, you need to ask for a raise because you're really good.
He was really good, and he was a really good sport.
He was a tremendously good sport, and he took all of my questions, and I was very aggressive with him. I was kind of being a jerk about this. I was trying to be a polite jerk. But I was just being honest, saying that, you know, I don't buy that, and pushing pretty hard. And, you know, he took all that incredibly professional. Anyway, the guy was good. That's not the point. This message that supporting HealthKit doesn't benefit us puts me off, because what it says is that we don't really care what our customers want.
Right. And it's pretty clear that there is a vocal portion of their user base that really wants HealthKit support.
Yeah. Now, this is pure speculation on my part, pure and total speculation. I think that one reason why Fitbit doesn't want to support, I think there are two reasons why Fitbit doesn't want to support HealthKit. One is that they would cede control of the user experience to Apple. No company wants to do that. Don't blame me for that. But the other reason is, I think that if they support HealthKit, they're going to have to be willing to give up control over the data. And I think that they see that data as a profit center. But that's precisely why I want to be with the HealthKit ecosystem in the first place.
Yeah, and
I don't know that they see user data as a profit center, but I suspect that they see user data as a profit center.
And that's of course a possibility. I haven't seen anything that says that they are selling our data to other companies or using us as a profit tool, aside from selling us hardware. Well, and they do have some add-on services that you can pay for.
Right. So anyway, that was rather interesting, but it still kind of came, the Apple related, we're actually running out of time. The Apple related observation is that Apple needs to do a better job of getting these companies on board with HealthKit if they want HealthKit to be a thing.
Yep.
And I have a feeling that Apple is waiting for the Apple Watch to come out to get really serious about HealthKit.
And I think if that's the case, that's a foolish move. They should be serious about HealthKit already.
Yes, I agree with that. Now, Apple's usual track record is to introduce stuff really, really slowly and to, I'm sorry, let me rephrase this. When Apple launches new platforms like this, for instance, Touch ID, you know, first only Apple had access to it, and now there's, you know, slowly making it possible for other companies to use Touch ID. Other services within Apple are using Touch ID. And for HealthKit, you know, Apple could just be waiting to see exactly how users are using this data. And you know, they're still working with the Mayo Clinic and other institutions on reporting data and stuff. But I think that Apple needs to be aggressive with this stuff. And I think that Apple needs to bring companies on board and make HealthKit the end-all be-all in terms of health and fitness monitoring as a platform.
Yeah, they need to commit in a serious way to this platform.
Yeah, there just wasn't enough angst about health kit from the companies that we talk to. And there should be angst from those companies. They should either be like, oh, yeah, no, we're working on HealthKit integration. Or, I don't know, HealthKit, you know, we're doing our thing better. And, you know, there should just be, like, angst about it. And
there was indifference.
Indifference, there we go. Indifference. Well put.
Yeah, that's not good news for Apple.
Yeah. It's not. It's not good news for HealthKit at the very least.
No.
So, you know, HealthKit isn't going to make or break Apple per se.
No. But, you know, it could be that we're both just being a little too sensitive to what we were hearing. And it could be that that it's not going to be an issue at all.
Yeah, that very, 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 very true. I tell you what, though. The reason why I am so keen on HealthKit being a thing is, again, because I like the idea of Apple putting me in charge of my health and fitness data and putting me in charge of who has access to it. I like that. I don't like being the product. Our long-term listeners know I don't like being the product. I don't want to be the product. I'm not interested in being the product.
No. And we're the product enough already.
Yes. We're already the product in enough other places. For that matter, Apple, give me a search engine.
Yeah, there you go.
I guess that's probably another show, though.
You know, we've said that before. I can't wait to find out what that show is.
I know, right? We are so over. It was a busy week. It was an interesting week. We saw some interesting stuff. I guess we should probably leave it there, huh?
I think so. It was great seeing you at CES.
It was great seeing you, Jeff. It's great seeing you and your bag.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your bag of stuff. But Kelly's writing that up.
Yeah. I know you were quite impressed when you saw the contents of my bag.
I that's absolutely correct. Now, Kelly's writing that story up, so make sure you check out the Mac Observer. I think it's going up today.
Yeah, I think so.
Today being Friday.
Right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Yeah, you can follow, by the way, Jeff is on Instagram at jgamut, and that's where we put up a lot of stuff from CES, a whole lot of stuff, actually more stuff on Instagram, I think, than went up on TMO.
You know, Instagram was fantastic because we could give people little snapshots of what we were seeing with a quick description and move on to the next thing. We were able to see more products by doing that than stopping and writing an article after each thing we saw.
It's true. And I'm at GeekTales on Instagram, too. I put up a lot of stuff as well. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. That's all for this week. I'm the one messing up the script this week.
Stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer unless you see us first. Wait, what?
I need to stop laughing because I'm only encouraging you.